Shelby and Matt.
And the Oscar goes to, honestly, the Oscar should go to us for our incredible journalism coverage.
I know.
For
I think we're better.
Plus years.
Yeah, we've only gotten better at predicting.
Do you think that we will get added to the Academy at some point?
We should be red carpet correspondents. I think that's our next step. They're letting just about anyone do
it. Would we be Jake Shane? I've been thinking about this a good amount. The Jake Shane disaster.
I know. I saw your report.
Which I did
card.
Write about in my Substack. And I feel like, you know, every journalist on Twitter is coming out of the woodwork to be like, and you see, this is why we need real journalists, because we would never do this. But then you watch certain journalists on the red carpet, and it's like, they're not that much better.
Like Zendaya, are you married? Oh my God.
Right, exactly. But then I was also sort of like, okay, if you are Vanity Fair, and you are picking people to do red carpet coverage for you. Like, obviously, this sort of exposure isn't exactly what you want because, you know, like, it sort of is a negative blowback on you of, like, why would you hire this person who clearly isn't prepared to do the red carpet to do the red carpet. But at the same time, a lot more people are paying attention and watching this coverage than they would have if it had just been some random stodgy journalist who no one cared about.
Yeah.
And also, it's like, I think less people on the red carpet are coming over to talk to him if it's not a celebrity person, you know, if it's just like a random journalist. Mm-hmm. And also then, like, no one cares about those clips. Mm-hmm. So while on one hand, I'm like, oh, I think this is sort of like a victory for journalists in showing that the work that they do, especially red carpets, which I think are extremely difficult and which I'm not good at, is like a very hard skill. But at the same time, I'm like, I sort of think that Vanity Fair ended up winning this despite the fact that they picked someone who was, you know, quote unquote, underqualified.
Well, I also think, like, I think your side of Twitter or whatever the discourse happening is more journalism and more like people who are like, this is serious. Whereas the general public, I think, thought I've only seen good positive things. Like, that's, people have been like, oh my God, it's so funny. He's so hysterical. Like, yes, I see myself here. And same with, like, because they had three influencers on the carpet. It was, I don't know them all.
Blackwell. And Jake Shane were together. And then I was like, I don't know where the third one was. I can't remember who it was.
She was on the other carpet. It's the royal court girl.
Was it Kombucha
Brittany.
Girl? Yeah, Brittany Broski. Yes.
Yeah. And so everyone thought it was, like, so funny. And so I think it was, like, a positive thing outside of it for a different generation, let's say.
Yes.
You know?
Yes. No.
The Gen Z of it all was happy to see them. And, yeah, I feel like it was just kind of, like, sure, it was awkward, but I think it's also awkward watching, like, the E! Or the Access Hollywood types be like, what? Like, just trying to get some sort of gotcha moment. So they're all bad. And I think the only answer is to have Mary Beth Gordon on all of them. I don't know why she wasn't there. I don't know why her stint at the Emmys?
No, she was at the Golden Globes.
Golden Globes. It's like, why wasn't she immediately called and booked for the Oscars?
Well, and the Oscars has Amelia de Mildenberg do their stuff on the carpet, who I think is also really qualified.
Yeah.
But the thing with her is, like, she has been doing celebrity interviews for years now. Like, that is her whole shtick. And I think she's also just, she's so funny. She's so quick-witted and good on her feet. And then also, like, she does a lot of preparation for it. And yeah. while Mary Beth isn't, like, a celebrity interviewer, per se, I also think, like, she did a lot of research.
A lot of prep, yeah.
Yes. And I think the thing with Amelia and Mary Beth is that they're both just sort of, like, unflappable people. Like, yeah. part of their whole bit is that they can sort of be in these awkward situations yeah. and they are unfazed by it.
Yeah.
The thing that I think is crazy about hiring Jake Shane is that his entire ethos is like, I have so much anxiety and I don't know what to do and I'm going to screw things up. And it's like, I don't know that that is the energy that you're looking for on a red carpet, which is already so stressful. Like, I hate red carpets because they're so chaotic. You know?
Yeah.
Like, don't you think that's his whole shtick, sort of, is like being anxious?
I'm honestly, I've only seen like the Ed Sheeran clip and then like one other thing. So I really don't know a lot of his, like, I've seen his skits, you know?
Yes.
Whatever he did where he's like acting like the Pixar eye or whatever. But yeah, no, I'm not familiar with his interviews.
I like him and I think he is funny and I follow him on social media.
Yeah.
Before this, but I'm sort of like, this just feels like an ill-matched pairing. And also, I don't know if I would, maybe he doesn't really understand how red carpets work entirely, but I was like, if I were alive, I wouldn't have agreed to this. You know what I mean?
Like, yeah. Like, yeah, he like flew too close to the sun.
Well, like I said in my Substack, I was like if somebody approached me and was like, hey, do you want to throw out like the first pitch of a baseball game or whatever, like as a celebrity? Like, I would have to sit here and think like, okay,
yeah.
I am not going to be good at this. So if I decide I want to do this, it has to be because of like, okay, I'm going to bring all my friends and we're going to get the box and we're going to like have a fun time at the baseball game. And I am like signing myself up to possibly be a meme of like a bad baseball thrower. Like, I know right. that's what I'm getting into. If I don't want to be seen negatively on the internet for my bad throwing abilities, then I should turn down this opportunity and take an opportunity that I feel like
so
I would
wise.
Be better
yeah,
suited
yeah.
at. You know?
Yeah.
It's
yeah,
like, oh, if sure. somebody's like, oh, would you like to be on, you know, $20,000 pyramid or whatever? It's like, okay, yes. Like that I believe that I can do
you
without
would
sort of like, you know, making myself, turning myself yeah. into an idiot.
Yeah.
A random side thing, which has nothing to do with anything, but I was thinking about you a couple days
ago. Oh, okay. Yeah.
I saw a TikTok that was this group of friends who were like trying to guess how many states they'd be able to correctly identify on a map. And they were like, I'm Macy and I think I can get 23 states. And then they all got so many states wrong. And it reminded me of that time where we played that game in the office to see who could get the amount of states. And I just assumed that everybody knew all 50 states. I was like, I thought we all learned this in school. Also, it's like, this is the country we live in. We've been to a lot of these places. A lot of them are states near you or they're like famous states that you're hearing about. Like, I just assumed most people knew all of the states. Was I wrong? And apparently Gen Z is getting even worse at this. I was like, one girl got 10 states. And I was like, how? Like,
so is the the game to list the states or to place them on a map?
To place them on a map.
Okay. Because one is easier than the other. You know, because you can get confused about, like, where exactly is Kansas, you know?
Like, there are certain states that I, like, okay, yeah. If you're getting, like, Kansas and Nebraska mixed up, if you're getting Colorado and Wyoming
or, like,
mixed
which
up,
one is like, West Virginia? Like, which sliver of the coast? Yeah.
Like I understand that. Sort of, especially if you're not from the East Coast, like there are a lot of small states out there or whatever. But I'm like, to only get 10 correct,
That's
like,
rough.
You have to think that the person automatically knows
Alaska, Hawaii, Texas,
like California, New York, Florida. Like, like, how are you only getting 10?
It's bad.
Like,
it's
you live in one state and then presumably like you've been to a couple.
I love this tangent. I think it's something we should dig into. I think
so. I'm like, I think this is a red carpet game that we should be playing. It's
you
smarter than a fourth grader, but on a red carpet.
Yeah,
where it's like, oh, can you Michael B. Jordan right. identify where that's Wyoming
a good idea. We should embarrass them a little. Like, oh, how much does a banana cost? I think that would be a fun game.
Yes.
That would be my red carpet shtick. Is like, so you think you're all hot shit?
Right.
Yeah. Let's humble you real quick.
Let's play Plinko.
Yeah.
Wait, how much does a banana cost?
That's an interesting question. I feel like it's different per state, right? I don't know. Well, and also you buy a bundle.
Right.
So like how much is a single banana? I guess that is a question. Probably a dollar.
I mean, that's what I would assume. And yeah. I think it's probably less than, I think you can get dollar or bananas
right.
that are probably like 50 cents, depending on the bulk you buy them. But then you could also get a banana that's like $3 if you buy
right.
it like
if
at a
you're
bodega or something.
Air
or like
yeah.
A, yeah, like a single banana at
yeah.
a Duane Reade. Like yeah, I bet that's yeah. like $2.50.
In line in one of those checkout lines, how much is a bag of candy? You know what? Okay, how much is a can of Progresso chicken noodle soup, Matt?
How much is a can of Progresso chicken noodle soup? I'm going to say Progresso, I feel like, is the cans are like a little bit bigger. And I also think that's like a slightly step up from Campbell's if I'm.
Okay.
So I feel like it's around like $3.50. But I'm also thinking about when I buy soup in New York. So it's actually
right.
probably cheaper in a lot of other
yeah.
places.
Yeah.
But if you bought it on Amazon, I'm going to say like $2.50.
Yeah, I feel like that's right. Let's see. I would guess $2 just to cut an average.
Okay.
How do I see
yes.
a price? I don't
on
do I have
Progresso
to go to like Instacart.
Progresso.
Okay, Target is selling it for $2.50.
Oh, perfect. Okay, so
look
I was
at
right
you.
On.
Look at you.
At me.
Walmart, $2. So
okay. okay.
Look at that.
Right, exactly. So we would pass.
We would
this
do okay.
Quiz.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. We should ask how much child labor was involved in the making of this dress, and then that would be,
ooh.
I think, spicy.
That could be.
Do you know where these feathers were sourced?
Yes,
Demi Moore.
Our whole thing is that we just make everybody on the red carpet feel yeah. really bad about themselves, and nobody wants to stop at our station.
Exactly.
We're sort of
we'd
like
have
the Debbie
one
Downers
good,
of the red
one
carpet.
Good, one uh-huh. good season. We'd pull it off well.
Do you know what the wages were for the illegal workers who built this tent for the Oscars today?
Yeah, exactly.
Yes.
Yeah. Cute.
Isn't
cute,
it sort
cute.
Of embarrassing that this entire carpet is just going to be put on a trash barge after the end of this because there's no possible reuse for it?
Yeah. Can you find on the map where this garbage will be sent? Indonesia or somewhere else? Yeah, no, I think that could be fun. Really change the tone of these carpets, which were pretty snoozy, to be fair.
I also do think it would be significantly easier to do a red carpet if you had a reliable buddy. Like, I think if it was you and I doing
yeah.
red carpet
yeah,
interviews
yeah, yeah.
together, because
support
we automatically have that banter and there's
yeah.
two of us to sort of pick up the slack,
exactly.
I think it would work better. Where if it's just you and then the celebrity, it's like the moment they stop talking, you've got to like,
yeah, it'd bam. Be a real battle. You know what is interesting is the I feel bad for the Glambot guy. He doesn't have a presence anymore. Like, he's there, but he's definitely not as centered.
So what happened with him? He got into a fight with somebody?
No, he had like rude emails from 2019 come out where he was like, you can't afford me.
Oh, yes.
And
yes.
that's it. And then he had to like go on hiatus, and then he came back, but there was no like, he's just like not as much the focal point. Like E! News or whoever manages the Glambot piece, like doesn't even put him in frame, it feels like. Like I saw a few different videos of celebrities doing the Glambot this time, and it's like he's out of frame, kind of talking to them in the background instead of being a main player in this.
With all of his hair and stuff. I mean,
yeah.
I feel like give it like a year and he'll be
yeah.
back in it, whatever,
yeah.
no one cares. The thing I was thinking, because they kept showing the Glambot footage in the, you know, like kind of like it, as they cut to commercial breaks or come
yeah.
back from commercial breaks,
yeah.
I feel like is when you see all of the Glambot footage. And I was like, I actually think that maybe we have moved past the point where we need the Glambot, because
yeah.
a lot of people aren't really good at it.
Right.
And I think a lot of the for every sort of like sickening one that you get,
yeah,
you get 20 that are just sort of bad, and people don't really know what to do, especially the men. And the women just kind of like flip their hair, or like maybe they'll twirl their dress, but it really depends on what you're wearing. And I just think the gimmick has sort of expired. Like there was a period. I remember there was, I want to say this was maybe like 2021 or 2022, where TikTok had sort of found the glam bot and was putting like fun music to sort of a montage of like glam bot videos. And that was really the height of it for me. And then sort of, I think once you had watched about 10 of those, you were like, okay, I'm good. I understand the glam bot. Like,
yeah.
I don't feel like we need this again.
Yeah. It really only works if the celebrity has like personality and does like a full send. Cause if it's just like, oh yeah, I have a pretty dress, like let me smize at the camera. It's like, okay. But if there's some like personality or.
But it's also so much about timing.
Yeah. Yeah. They have to be able to lock in on that camera or it's just awkward.
Yeah. It's like, because you can hit it too early or you can hit it too late. And because they make like, what, a half a second into like 4 seconds in the video, it's like if you go a little too early or a little too late, it doesn't really work.
Yeah, that's right.
And then sometimes, you know, it's like your eye might be weird. Like you really have to be, you know, it's an America's Next Top Model challenge, really, is what the glam bot exactly. is. Like,
and that's what's fun is we get to judge the bad ones, you know. We get to hate on the bad ones. But they've gotten like better at least trying, so it's not like no one's doing the like who is the girl who did the thumbs up one, Joey King's
yes.
like terrible one or something like that. Like they're all just like, oh yeah, I'm pretty, here you go. I do think the like growing trend, like I've seen, okay, we're trying to do the like signing the camera thing, which I don't love because it's like backwards.
Yeah,
but I also feel like the next trend will be the photo booth. Like, I think they did that with the Oscars here.
Yes, which I really like.
Yeah, and exactly. I think it's more fun and people can be more loose and it's not so much like, look at how hot I am. It's like capturing a moment and everyone loves a photo booth.
Everybody looks good in a photo booth. There's something about the lighting and the whatever. It's like, you cannot be taking bad photos in a photo booth. Like, even me at my worst is looking good in a photo, which is shocking.
Yeah.
Sometimes.
Well, they're fun and you have multiple options. And even if you get a bad photo, that's like part of the fun is like recovering quickly after like missing the mark.
And you can take one with other people. You can take it by yourself. And especially with like the Oscars, oh, you already have this prop that you have with you in the trophy. I think the photo booth was a really smart move that they pulled off here. I really like that.
Well, anyway, should we talk about the Oscars, I guess?
Yes, let's talk about the Oscars, the 98th Academy Awards. We're getting very close to the 100th Academy Awards, which I think will be fun. I think that's the last one that's on ABC before they go to YouTube, so
I know. Can you believe?
I've heard both positive and negative things about the move to YouTube. On like one hand, it's YouTube, so it does feel like we've sort of lost some of the glitz and glamour of it. And who knows what kind of strange things, you know, Google is going to try to push in this rather than it being owned by a media company. At the same time, ABC was just like so obsessed with trying to get these numbers up. And every year they're like, we got to shorten it and we got to do this and we got to do this other thing. And it's like, I don't think YouTube cares at all if the ceremony runs long, you know, like it could be 10 hours. They're not going to be cutting people's speeches off. They might have more sort of leeway to do interesting things because it's not, you know, a televised audience. So I am interested in that. And then I'm also really excited that then that means all of the clips will be like very easy to find on YouTube. Because some of the old Oscar clips are just like nightmarish to be looking for.
Yeah, that's true. What a positive outlook. I feel like my issue is less like, oh, this show is on YouTube. And it's more like, wow, what does this say about media at large and like our changing relationship to media forms and kind of like the death knell of all things. I don't know. Like, I don't know. There's something more tailored about a broadcast. Whereas, like you said, this could be just anything. And it feels kind of like a Webby Award style of like either super gimmicky or super unedited. And neither really speaks well for celebrating an art form that should be pretty, you know. I don't know.
I 100% know what you're talking about. I think we're kind of in the middle of a weird, like, return to the same thing that we've always been, though. Like, I'm trying to think of how to say this. Like, because of streaming and the internet or whatever, obviously things have changed a lot since, like, network TV and cable TV and premium cable, like those being the options. And now there's a lot of different forms, and we've got streaming, and then there's streaming that you paid for and streaming you didn't pay for, and different levels, and there's YouTube and there's TikTok, and there is still things on regular TV, but then sometimes those are also on stream. Like, it's been very convoluted. And I kind of think we are circling back to the same model that we had originally, which is the, like, network TV, cable, premium cable. It just sort of has different names now, because my uncle and my dad both will just sit in front of the TV. I didn't realize that this was a thing until I got down here to Florida. Like, I've never heard of anyone doing this, but apparently this is like a building trend in populace at large, where they will sit down in front of the TV, and instead of watching TV or cable surfing or going to, or channel surfing, or, you know, going to like cable networks, they'll just put on YouTube and then watch through YouTube videos. So, like, sometimes YouTube shorts, sometimes like regular YouTube videos, but it's like on the TV screen, and they're watching things that pop up, and they're picking things as if it was cable, except for it's YouTube. So I'm sort of like, I think it's only a matter of time until like that sort of integration gets all of the TV shows and movies and stuff put in it, or the streamers sort of like figure out some version of this, and then we'll basically be back to cable again, just in a slightly different version. Because it's like, clearly there's people in the world who just want to sit in front of the TV and watch random stuff that comes their way, and they used to be able to do that with cable, then cable sort of disappeared, but I think we're like gonna get cable again in a different version. So I'm a little bit like, if people are sitting down and watching YouTube on their TV already, it's not that different if the awards show is on YouTube and they're watching it, or if they have to like click off their app and go on to their regular TV and watch it on ABC.
That's like so depressing to me.
I mean, yes,
just the fact, just because YouTube is a toxic sludge of an algorithm that feeds you things to keep you further enmeshed in YouTube, but
wasn't cable that as well?
The psychology. Cable was made up of shows made by, you know, creative teams. YouTube is just anyone with a camera who can pay to play or say enough controversial things that they're getting the views they want to be top of the page to then, you know, I mean, yeah, it's fine.
Well, but they're also selling a flashlight that killed killed Bin Laden. So that's important as well.
Yeah. Well, and I think it's interesting, like, Warner Brothers being the biggest winner of the night, being the, you know, companies behind Sinners and One Battle After Another. But Warner Brothers is about to be no more, as they're purchased by, who's in the running now? Paramount?
I think it's Paramount currently. Although I still think that there is a chance that this could get shut down by.
Yeah, I mean, it should be. It's like a crazy monopoly.
Like an antitrust thing.
Yeah.
Because they tried to pull this off in book publishing a couple of years ago, where Penguin Random House tried to buy Simon & Schuster.
But how was the government then? You know. Who were the judges
true,
on the courts then?
True. I guess,
you know,
I don't know when this, like, what the timeline on this is, because if the decision for these things comes after the midterms, I think it might be different than if
different.
It comes.
Well, the judges are already.
Is that who decides things? The judges?
I guess I don't know the full court system of something like the government getting involved in that. I don't know the antitrust laws. But you're right. Maybe.
Who knows?
Maybe. Maybe. Poor Warner Brothers, though. Yeah. What a way to go out.
We do feel bad for, I mean, Warner Brothers owned by David Zaslav. And yeah. I did see it in the supposed deal. He would make like $800 million. Obscene. And it's like, okay. Oh, my gosh. We've got to. We need. This is another topic for another podcast. I'm like, we've got to start taxing people more. Like, that I really know, is right? the answer to so many so of our many. Problems as a society. Is just like, tax rich people more. That.
Because I know.
The problem right now is that rich people are just hoarding all of this money.
Yeah.
So everyone else is like fighting for small.
But Matt, like, what if one day you're a billionaire? You know,
I'm not going to be a billionaire. And also, if I am, as we've discussed ad nauseum on this podcast,
take it.
Nobody needs to be a billionaire. Everyone can be Emma Stone's level of wealth. That is acceptable.
That's the key. Yeah.
That's the you're allowed to be as rich as Emma Stone. Any more than that, it's a little problematic.
Okay.
The Oscars. The Oscars. Conan O'Brien hosted the Oscars.
Yeah.
Let's talk about Conan first.
Okay.
What are your thoughts?
I do not like Conan O'Brien. I think he is overrated. And I feel like I've said this. How many times has he hosted the show since we've started this podcast?
I think this is his second time.
His hosting. Second. Yeah. Well, I just think he's such a snooze. And I saw your Substack come through and you were like, A+ monologue. And I was like, did I accidentally watch the wrong monologue? Because I feel like this was terrible. Like, no one laughed. It wasn't that fun. Sure, he got like a zing in at the, who is it? The like.
Ted Sarandos.
Yeah. Head of something.
Head Amazon. Of Netflix.
Oh, Netflix. Sure. One zinger. But then everything else didn't hit. And it wasn't even that like. Broad or relatable or funny to me personally as a Conan hater.
Okay, whatever you say. I liked him. This is his second year. Then we had Jimmy Kimmel for 2 years before that. Then in 2022 was the year that it was Regina Hall, Amy Schumer, and Wanda Sykes. Remember that?
Yeah. <So strange. laughs> Crazy.
Then we had 3 years with no host.
Oh, yeah.
Then before that, it was 2 years of Jimmy Kimmel, then Chris Rock.
Iconic.
Also host, or was he just a presenter when he got slapped, I guess?
I think he was the host.
Huh. Okay.
Then wasn't he? 2020, or I don't know. When was that? I guess that was a no-host season, huh?
It looks like that was a Jimmy Kimmel year. I'm confused. Maybe. I don't know. Anyways. James Franco and Anne Hathaway would have
iconic. Honestly, I was like, bring them back, please.
Bring
anything.
Them back. Oh my goodness. Well, James Franco not, but I Anne Hathaway.
Yeah, yeah.
And you know who was not great though, I feel like was I Anna Wintour really nailed her bits of the Wintour. Presenting that she had to do. I felt like Anne Hathaway was a little shaky. I didn't love
Are
her.
You losing faith in Annie?
I'm not losing faith in her necessarily.
It's been a few low points for you, I feel like.
Well, so she's pivoted to like this style icon, which mm-hmm. I appreciate because I do feel like I wish more celeb, like, here's the thing. Being stylish as a celebrity actually takes zero work. Because
I know.
You hire a stylist
and
then you just wear things that the stylist wants you to wear.
Yeah.
And so I think that if you decide, oh, I want to now be a stylish celebrity, it is so easy to do that. Yeah. And I don't understand why more celebrities are not pushing for that, because it feels like you're going to get different brand deals. You're going to be, you know, there's a whole nother industry that you unlock by being a stylish celebrity. So I love that Anne Hathaway has gone that way. Mm. However, I do feel like perhaps because she's gone that way, it sort of feels like she's doing less projects, although she has like five that are coming out this year because they're packed up. But like, she hasn't, I don't know, I feel like she's sort of been made a couple of like weird-ish choices, and I don't feel like I have a really strong understanding of like who she is at this moment as an actor, where I feel like I used to have a really strong understanding of who she was at. Because I think she used to be sort of like theater kid energy.
Yeah.
But now she's like cool kid energy. And I don't know how cool kid energy and theater kid energy mix when it comes to being an actor.
Right.
I'm excited, though, to see her on all of these, you know, press cycles that she's going to be on for basically the next year, because I think that'll give us a lot better understanding of like where she is as a
you
person.
Miss her.
But going back to Conan O'Brien.
Okay, yeah.
I felt like you could tell that he had watched the movies and like sort of like a lot of the jokes felt topical to me and felt like they were about the films. I really liked the opening sequence of him dressed as the woman from
Aunt Gladys,
like running through the different movie clips. I thought that was great. And I also really liked the end clip of him pretending to be Lockjaw, like being put in the office where he's gonna get smoked out. And I also thought he handled the like run of the show really well. He sort of kept coming out for like little one-liners and for a couple of those really awkward moments with the with them like turning off the music or stopping the mic or whatever. I thought he handled those really well. Cause I guess I don't know if you saw this or not. Did you watch the whole thing or did you just feel like, okay. Well, like where I can't remember who it was. Like they,
it was the, they
played them off. Okay. Time. Yeah. It's like they played them off with the music and then the camera cuts to Conan and Conan's like, no, I'm not going to go on again. Like, give them back the speech. And then the camera cuts back to them and the lights go back up and the microphone raises again. And then the person continues their speech. And then the next time we saw Conan, he had like, I thought a good, like on the fly quip about that. I just feel like he was sort of an able host. And I liked that his jokes were a little bit pointed at like the industry of it all, but felt like they were more reverent of the movies themselves and the like artistry that was there and less of like nobody cares about these movies like who watched this, which I feel like was what Jimmy Kimmel shtick often was,
right? But like what's one joke?
Well, I thought the Ted Sarandos one was
okay
funny.
Okay, one out of a 10-minute monologue.
I'm trying to think what were other
forgettable.
Okay. You know what? Whatever. You know, moving on. I thought he did a good fine.
It was like, oh, the Leo DiCaprio. Like it just felt like yes, there's a level of comfort that comes from someone in his position. So he can kind of like come out and comfortably navigate like an awkward situation. But he's also it also gives him permission to like kind of phone it in. Like, sure, he name dropped like Hamnet, but he didn't really have anything to say about Hamnet. It was like, oh, Hamnet and Hamlet are the same name. And then some joke I already forgot because I just feel like it's whatever. And I think, too, the audience did not laugh. And that's always awkward. And it was like, it just became kind of a slog.
I mean, his monologue wasn't as good as like Nikki Glaser's, I think, was. Especially last year's Nikki Glaser monologue, I thought was really strong.
Yeah.
But I felt like as a host who is, you know, presiding over the whole event, I thought he did a nice job.
Well, he has an open invitation to come back, so
lame. I mean, I sort of feel like we might just be getting him for the next 2 years,
well, because I think
I think no matter who you are, the gig of hosting the 100th Oscars is like, that's a gig you want. Like, I think even if you're someone who's like, oh, I don't really need, like,
it'll be Jake Shane and Brittany Brothers.
Well, right, exactly. But like, I bet they could get like Tina Fey and Amy Poehler to come out of retirement to host the 100th Oscars. Like, I think anybody would take that. Yeah. And so I am sort of like, yeah, if you've got the open invite from the Oscars for Conan for the 99th, you're like, okay, let me. I'll sign
might
up.
Might as well
for the
keep it going.
Two.
Yeah,
I'll do the 100th.
Yeah. I mean, I think that's the thing, is like the Oscars tend to be, it's a boring show. It's long and there's not a lot of ways to break it up. And so I think more often than not, we don't enjoy the show itself. Mm. It wasn't like the worst. It wasn't the best. It was just kind of like mid. I felt.
I liked the Conan stuff. What I hated was the presenter bits. Yeah. I thought the presenter bits this year were all terrible.
Like they were boring.
They were, but they weren't the, you like, it wasn't like we got a whole bunch of people who are like, cinema is the craft of creating space. Yeah. Like everybody was doing some sort of bit, but they were all bad. Like bad or it was like the idea was good, but the execution was bad or the like, the like, and then also because a lot of people had two categories that they were presenting, it was like they would do one bad bit and you'd think, okay, that's done. And then they'd come back for a second bad bit. Like the, Robert Downey Jr., Chris Evans stuff was sort of like, what is going on here? And then they're like, oh, the gift I got for you was Channing Tatum's Magic Mike underwear. And then we're also going to cut the Channing Tatum in the audience, who's also going to have a line. And it's like, what year is, like, why are we making a Magic Mike joke in 2026?
Yeah.
Like, what?
I know. I was thinking about that with, like, because there's always an indulgent sort of like nostalgia to these presenters. Like, obviously, we got the Moulin Rouge reunion, which I liked because I like Moulin Rouge, and Nicole Kidman's energy is so mesmerizing.
Wacky, yes.
But then you also get like Bridesmaid coming out. But it's not to like, it, like, at least like, okay, Anne Hathaway and Anna Wintour, they're hyping up Devil Wears Prada 2. Like, it's relevant, it's happening, and it's quick and easy. And painless. But then you have the Bridesmaid reunion, but they're not really like joking about Bridesmaids per se. Like, yeah, there's some referential jokes to that movie, which I admittedly do not care about. But also it's like an extended bit that doesn't add anything to the categories they're talking about. So it's sort of like, yeah, I think there needs to be a better way of merging these nostalgia like hits with what's actually happening. Like, I think about the, I don't remember, I guess, what they were presenting, but like Kirsten Wig and Will Ferrell, like they had that funny little, was it about sound or editing or like?
Well, I'm not sure which one. If, the one that I'm thinking of is when they presented for the Golden Globes and they were like, oh, and this year the Globes asked all the presenters to watch all the films in their category, which we totally did.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And then proceeded to, like, give these, like, really weird fake plots that they were improvising on the spot about, like, what the movies were.
Yeah.
And, yeah. And I think the best presenter bit this year was when Meg Stalter and Paul W. Downs were pretending that they were cast in Hamnet, but then had been cut from the Hamnet. Because it's like, yeah, that it is topical and it makes sense and it sort of connects with what they're there to present more than it does to, you know, whatever else they've got going on, to the fact that they're in Hacks or whatnot.
Yeah.
The thing with the Bridesmaids bit was that, I mean, and that was another one where they presented two categories, so they each did like two bits. But there wasn't a, like, there wasn't a through line. It sort of felt like everybody came up with one idea for a bit they could do, and they said, okay, well, we'll do a little of all of those. Like, because there was a little, because first there was, first they had a couple of lines, then they cut to the, like, oh, and we've actually gotten notes from the audience.
Right.
And so we each have to read our note from the audience, none of which were really funny.
None of them were funny.
And then they presented the first award. And then they came back and had a whole nother set of bits in the second award. And I think that the stuff that works has a clearer vision. Yeah. Like, even when, like, even when Amy Poehler used to do those things at the Emmys where they would, where everybody in her category would sort of do something funny.
Yeah.
Or like when they would, when everybody, that year that they did it like a beauty contest and everybody like stood on the stage.
Yeah.
Like, that has such a point of view to it.
Yeah. Yeah.
And none of these presenter bits did, except I think for the Anna Wintour, Anne Hathaway one, which Anne Hathaway just, I don't think quite nailed it.
Yeah. I mean, I think it's like, obviously, I like, people will complain about like, oh, this is such like a narcissistic love fest. Everyone's just like glad handing each other, whatever. That's always going to be the complaint. So at least like lean into it and let these people poke fun of themselves or each other, or just be more like audacious about it, because this just felt so phoned in. I mean, even the bridesmaid bit was like literally a worse done part of that SNL skit that Ryan Gosling just did, where they like were passing, reading notes that were being passed in class. And that was funny because it was like part of the shtick was that they hadn't read those jokes before in rehearsal. So they were like breaking fourth wall and all this. And so then like watching this like kind of happen again, I was like, well, wait, why is this like, obviously I don't think they like stole the idea, and I don't know how the writers, who's writing this, the jokes for the Oscars versus SNL, but it just felt like, okay, you guys aren't really trying anything new or doing anything fun. And that just makes it like boring to everyone involved. Like I'd rather watch long speeches than have these like awkward cameo sort of presenters come in.
Yeah. Like if you're not going to do something that really is funny and works, then I think just do like the very straightforward thing, you know, where it's like, oh, here comes Zoe Saldana. She's presenting Best Supporting Actress. She's going to say like, all you women had incredible performances this year, blah, blah, blah. And the nominees are, and it's like short and sweet. We actually don't need the presenter standing there for very long.
Yeah.
I did really like the best casting thing because it was the first time that had been presented, that they had one person from each movie sort of talking about the casting director and that. Like, I thought that was cool.
It was fun to show like the movie magic. Like, and that's the other thing too, is like, I think one of my favorite historic bits from the Oscars of my life was when they were like talking about musicals or something, and they made all the non-musicals into musicals for like a pre-recorded bit where they like have Harry Potter singing a song that they just, do you remember this?
Vaguely.
You're a tiny ball, a little tiny ball of light. Like, it's just like, it was bad. It was a bad sort of like, you know, form of music, but it was fun because it's just like highlighting, I don't remember, it was like sound mixing or something. And I think it's like things like that, like if you need to pre-record something to be funny, then like do it, you know, have a bit that's not something that's depending on these presenters who did one read through last night and are now coming up and trying to make like a point in their pretty dresses. I don't know.
Yeah. Anything else about the actual ceremony that we shall discuss?
I want to say for the record that the stage was awful.
Oh, yes.
It was so distracting. Like it. And it looked, I don't know what they were going for. It always reminded me of like a farm, like a barn they were in or something. And I don't think that was the goal.
There was a placement where people stood that was over towards the side. And the way that the like glass worked or whatever, whenever someone was standing there, it looked like there was a sign behind them that you couldn't really read.
Yeah.
And it kept cutting to that. And I would go, what does that say? Oh, I don't think it's anything. I think it's just the background. Oh, okay. And then the next time it would cut there, I would think the same exact thing.
Yeah.
There was a stage like in 2007 or something I'm sure it must have been in like the steampunk renaissance. It was just all of these light bulbs. Like it was just of these old like Tom Edison light bulbs like on. And I thought that was the most beautiful stage that there's ever been. And I'm like, they've never topped it in my mind.
No, this was very busy and like aggressive with the sharp angles. And I didn't know what they were going for.
Yeah. But we also had a very long in memoriam section.
Which I think they're always hard, but I did like the special shout out to like true legends, which I always wonder like who gets to decide who makes the cut for like a special tribute. Mm-hmm. Like obviously Rob Reiner, like that's such a tragedy and like so shocking and just like brutal that I think it was really nice to like highlight that. But then Diane Keaton getting like a special shout out, I was also sort of like, how does this, like, what about Catherine O'Hare? You know, like, who decides, which gets special attention?
It was a little bit, like, once you start making decisions, then, like, who is, like, who gets...
who's special?
Right. Yeah, like, who's famous enough that they get something, and then who's not famous
enough? Who just gets thrown up here, yeah.
Right.
But nice. And the musical performances were good. I mean, I Lied to You is so good. And like,
yeah,
having that full force, like, I think highlights again why that movie was so beloved. Golden was cute, but kind of sleepier than expected.
I also do think it is weird, though, again, and maybe this is just me like being overly sticklerish or something, but like the to only give the song performances to like the quote unquote more popular songs, I think is weird.
Yeah.
Like, I feel like if you want to do the song performances, you have to let all five people perform. Like, sure, if someone doesn't want to perform, that's fine. But I'm like, it's strange to me that they're like, well, the song from Sinners and the song from K-Pop Demon Hunters are really popular and people like those. So those get to be performed on the air. But then the Diane Warren song and the song from Train Dreams, we don't get to hear. Like, I don't know. Weird. I feel like you either have to like cut them all or have them all. And if you want to do something different, like, okay, we're not going to do any of the nominated songs, but like we're going to do one big like K-pop Demon Hunters medley of like a bunch of the songs from the movie or something, or like the year that they had Wicked do, like, you know, sort of like a Wicked medley. Like, I'm fine with that also, but I just feel like it's sort of weird, and I don't want to say unfair necessarily, but I don't know. It just like irks me that there's the lack of symmetry in that.
For sure.
Okay, so then I guess let's talk about the actual winners themselves.
Okay.
One battle after another had, you know, the big night. It won best picture and best director. It won 6 Oscars total. That also included Sean Penn for best supporting actor. It won best adapted screenplay. It won best
casting,
and then also best film editing for a gay film editor. Who knew? That was an exciting part to me when they announced that they won, and then he like kissed his boyfriend and then had a very faggy voice when he got up to the stage. I was like, good for you, Andy Jurgensen. Like, love that. And then he thanked his aunt. Like, there's no gayer way into a field than like my cool aunt did it. So then I decided I was going to do it.
I did also like the best casting being announced pretty early in the night, and she's like, Paul, I can't believe I got one of these before you. Like, good luck. Right.
Yes, that was also incredible.
Funny. But yeah, it was nice.
I like, in a perfect world, I do think that Sinners wins Best Picture and Paul Thomas Anderson wins Best Director, but I was perfectly happy with One Battle winning. Like, both of those movies were incredible. I think both of them will be classics that people watch for years. Like, it didn't feel like there was really a loser in either of them. And the fact that Sinners got 4 Oscars, including Michael B. Jordan for Best Actor, and Ryan Coogler also won an award for Best Original Screenplay, I was like, okay, I'm happy that these are the two best movies. They split 10 Oscars between them, including lots of big prizes. Like, good for them.
Yeah. No, exactly. I feel like once the night got going, it seemed pretty clear One Battle would like take home the main prize, but there was enough throughout that made it kind of fun to see what would nab the other prizes.
Yeah. I mean, I think the biggest sort of upset, I guess, of the night was Michael B. Jordan beating Timothy Chalamet for Best Actor.
Let's take a moment to celebrate Marty Supreme's 0 wins. Thank you.
For Marty Supreme.
I've been a hater since day 1, so I appreciated it.
I liked Marty Supreme as a movie, but I was rooting for Michael B. Jordan. Like, from the moment we saw Sinners, I'm sure you can go back to that episode and re-listen to it. Like, we are like, oh, Michael B. Jordan should be winning Best Actor. Like, he's giving 2 incredible performances. He just is so good. And he's been so good in so many things, like Fruitvale Station, Black Panther, the Creed movies, that it feels like he was due for this. Yeah. And then Timothy Chalamet was just so annoying in his press tour.
Yeah.
And I'm beginning to wonder if he's just an annoying person.
Oh, 100%. I don't think that's ever been in doubt. Like, from Lady Bird on, I feel like he's super annoying.
Not to compare him to a sex offender, but I do feel like there is a little bit of the Kevin Spacey thing going on here, where it's like, no, and not in that way, not in the sex offender way. But you know how, like, everyone was like, oh, Kevin Spacey's so good at playing these, like, creepy men. He's awesome. And then it's who are, like, have anger issues and whatever. And yeah, then it turns out, oh, no, he actually, like, he really wasn't playing these characters. Like, he just sort of is like that. And so people cast him.
Yeah.
I do think, like, even if you look back to, like, the character he played in Lady Bird, like, version of Laurie that he is in Little Women.
He's a little narcissist. He's a little douchey.
Yeah, he's always a little douchey and a little bratty. Yeah. And he just brings that to every single performance that he does. And that is the whole ethos of Marty Supreme.
So funny.
And has been his whole vibe on the press tour. And it's like, oh, maybe that's not actually really acting that much. Maybe that's just sort of his vibe. And I can see why, if you were an Academy member, that wouldn't necessarily appeal to you.
Yeah.
Where Michael B. Jordan's vibe seems like very, like, nice, hardworking, like,
he's always bringing his mom. Yeah.
He's always bringing his mom. He's talking about how he loves, like, Japanese anime. Yeah. You know, like, he just seems like a nice guy.
Yeah. Yeah. I know. I'm happy for him. I mean, I, you know, I try not to stan celebrities, learn my lesson. They're probably all kind of various forms of assholes, but I have liked him. And I do like to see him succeed. And I especially liked the cut to Jesse Plemons, his co-star from Friday Night Lights, because I just think that's cute. I think that's cute. I was a sucker for it.
You could also just tell that the room was so genuinely so excited for him to win.
Yeah.
With, like, Delroy Lindo and obviously all of the Sinners people, like Ryan Coogler. Yeah. Everybody was just elated that he won that prize.
It was like I saw a different angle. I think it was like Pedro Pascal who was like, you know, banging him on the shoulder.
Yeah.
It was cute. It's always nice when there's like, it was a surprise in the sense that there had been a front runner before, but it was also like proof that everyone was stoked for him to like get that.
I also loved that when Jesse Buckley won, who we sort of knew would win and has won everything, that like Paul Mescal and Gracie Abrams were sitting right behind her and also both looked like ecstatic that she won. And she seemed thrilled by that. Like, sometimes I think when people who've won a bunch of awards, like, finally win the Oscar, they're not like quite as jazzed up about it, but she seemed elated. So that was a fun win to watch as well, I thought.
I didn't know Gracie Abrams was dating Paul Mescal.
Oh, really?
Wasn't it like, is that who was tangled up in like the, there was like some love triangle or something happening, right?
Yeah, there was something with Phoebe Bridgers, I think.
Gracie Abrams just like reads as like 18 to me.
But she's not.
She's not. Like,
no, because I saw a tweet about this where it's like people keep talking about like the age gap discourse, but they're actually only like 3 years apart. Paul Mescal just has gray hair and Gracie Abrams just looks 12.
Yeah. It was also funny to think of the, like, because Gracie Abrams has the song with Taylor Swift. And so the Taylor Swift of it all and the Paul Mescal and then the Joe Alwyn universe is interesting to me, thinking about them interacting together.
Well, yeah, because there's also, because Paul Mescal is in like a friend group.
Yeah, the Tortured Boys Club, right? Or was he not part of that?
What is that?
Remember, it came out when she released her album that Joe Alwyn and his group of friends from, I guess Paul Mescal wasn't in Conversations with Friends or whatever.
Yeah, no. I think, but like Paul Mescal and Daisy Edgar Jones from like Normal People, I think have sort of like an Irish friend group that also includes like Saoirse Ronan and some of the other people from Normal People. But then Gracie Abrams has been like spotted in that friend group, obviously, because she's dating Paul Mescal. And I think so has Joe Alwyn at various points, because like they've obviously hung, like, there's a, just a lot of, like, connections within that, like, British group. So it is weird to think that, like, they probably all have met Taylor Swift, and I wonder what they think about her,
because
it doesn't really seem like Paul Mescal and Taylor Swift would get along very well.
I know, but then Gracie Abrams. Interesting is all. Interesting.
Yeah.
But, anyways, yeah, Jesse Buckley, cute.
And then we had Sean Penn win. He wasn't there. I was very annoyed about that. I'm like, why are we giving him this prize? He already has two Oscars.
It's about the performance, Matt. You're like such a legacy voter.
I'm just like a... like, spread the wealth, kind of. You know what? Like, there's lots of really good performances every year. And actors are doing very different things. And while, yes, like, I think that we should be awarding the best performance, like, I also think that Delroy Lindo is giving a really good performance
for sure.
And he's 70 some years old and he's never been nominated. Like, let's maybe give him the Oscar over Sean Penn, who already has two Oscars and clearly does not care about winning a third.
Yeah, no, for sure. I agree. You just want a graded rubric, I think. You want a weighted score for some of these.
It's not even like a weighted score. I'm just like with Emma Stone and Begonia, I'm like, okay, you have two Oscars. Do I think you did a great job in Begonia? Yes, absolutely. But I don't think you need a third Oscar over Jesse Buckley or Rose Byrne or Renata Reinspach, who I think are also giving great performances this year and don't have an Oscar.
Right.
At some point, if you become sort of like a Meryl Streep-esque figure, then I think it's appropriate for you to have a third Oscar because it's like, oh, your career, like, you know, like Denzel Washington, I think, is due a third Oscar. Like, if he gives a good performance in something, I'm like, yes, like, he is a once in a generation talent, let's give him a third Oscar. But there's certain, but I don't think that Sean Penn is that person, so I don't think he deserves three Oscars.
Yeah, no, for sure. I was disappointed by that one as well.
You know, who did deserve an Oscar and did win an Oscar was Amy Madigan, though, for Weapons.
Cute.
I loved her winning.
Always a fun start is sort of the underdog getting first prize. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. She's a hoot. She's a character. Who's she married to? The guy from Armageddon?
Ed Harris.
So funny.
And then also they keep, like, she's a very political person, I think, as well. And they keep showing this clip on TikTok of some Oscars way back when they were honoring some like old Hollywood legend who had been involved in like the McCarthy communism stuff.
Yeah.
And her and Ed Harris just like sitting there like stone faced, not clapping. And I'm like, yeah, get it, girl. Like that's the vibe that we like.
Yeah. No, for sure. I also liked, I mean, I feel like the best speeches were the Sinners winners, honestly. No bias, but the fact that that cinematographer won, gorgeous, love it. Love that she took that moment for, you know, women empowerment. Women. So cute. I love that Ryan Coogler ran up the stage to get her son to then bring closer to watch. So cute. And so, yeah, those were the highlights for me personally. The lowlights was F1, honestly. Goat joke.
F1 winning best sound? Or did it win?
They won two. It won like best editing best or something ridiculous.
And no, it only won one.
What am I thinking of? No, it won two.
Frankenstein won three.
Well, yeah, that was always a given.
No, F1 only won one.
Well, it was one too many.
It was one. It felt like two.
It was, yeah, it was sweet for me.
K-pop Demon Hunters also won two.
It won best editing. Oh, okay. So then...
No, it didn't win best editing. That's what the gay guy from One Battle After Another won. I'm on the Wikipedia page right now. And it says that it only won one Oscar. You're hallucinating.
Oh my gosh. Okay. It says it right here on CNN. Best editing. Oh, no, you're right.
Faulty information. K-pop Demon Hunters won too.
Oh, yeah, okay.
The movies that won multiple awards were One Battle After Another won 6, Sinners won 4, Frankenstein won 3, K-pop Demon Hunters won 2, everything else only won a single Oscar.
Well, so then I want to state a correction on our ballots. I said you got 14 out of 24, but if best editing did in fact go to one battle, then you got 15 out of 24.
Wow.
And I got 13 out of 24. So
okay, well, sorry that we have the Jake Shane of journalism over here doing the tabulations.
Sorry, I was like literally at Disneyland.
She'll be at Disneyland, like screaming at bypass.
I'm like, I can't believe it.
They're like, ma'am, it's a small world. Please control yourself.
Yeah. Okay, that's great. Glad, but still annoyed F1 can call itself an Oscar-winning movie. Trash. Put it in the dumpster.
Marty Supreme got 0 Oscars, even though it had 9 nominations.
Gorgeous.
And then Begonia got 0 wins.
Yeah.
Well, that's because they didn't nominate Jesse Plemons. Wins, and Train Dreams got 0 wins, and those all had 4 nominations.
Yeah.
But F1 did win.
Yeah.
1 Oscar.
Did Sentimental Value not get anything either?
No, it won Best International Feature.
Oh, that's right.
Over The Secret Agent, which I was happy with.
Yeah. I should have seen that coming.
That definitely deserved that, I felt like. Okay, let's see. What else haven't we talked about? K-Pop Demon Hunters obviously was going to win. I was a little bit annoyed that Mr. Nobody Against Putin won the Best Documentary Prize.
Like, enough about Russia.
Because you had watched a bunch of these. Yes? Did you see that one?
I did not see that one. I thought in comparison to the
Alabama Solution.
Oh yeah.
Come See Me in the Good Light and The Perfect Neighbor.
Oh yeah, yeah.
That Mr. Nobody was not as good. And then I was looking back, and three out of the four past Best Doc Features were about the Russia-Ukraine conflict, and I'm like, well, that
like, enough.
Well, no, I'm just like, I think it's interesting that out of all of the sort of like issues and the issue driven documentaries that we have, that for whatever reason, the Oscars seem fixated on that one.
Well, it is an international voting body, and the other three are all very American. At least the Alabama Solution and the Perfect Neighbor are very like U.S. issue based.
Yeah.
God help us. But yeah, I think that's just more prevalent to a lot of the world.
Yeah, I guess if you're in Europe, that documentary is like more. Okay, so that makes sense. Yeah. There was a tie for Best Live Action Short. That was fun.
I know. You didn't. Or no, you were hoping for two people exchanging saliva.
Yes.
Cute.
Which was one of the winners. Yeah. So I was happy about that. The one that I hated, A Friend of Dorothy's, was neither of the winners. So I was happy about that. Sinners won Best Original Score, which is the third time that Ludwig Göransson has won in like 6 years. So that's crazy. He also won for Black Panther and Oppenheimer.
Mm, sorry. He's so talented. You know.
Golden One, obviously. F1 won sound. Ugh. Do you have anything final to say about that?
No.
No. Best casting, which we already talked about, went to Sinners. Best cinematography also went to Sinners. And then best production design, best hair and makeup, best costume went to Frankenstein. Boo, hiss, boo, hate Frankenstein. And then, of course, Avatar wins best visual effects. So
yeah.
I think that's... most of those seem, you know, correct enough.
I mean, I think you guessed Frankenstein would win, so I feel like you can't be mad that it did.
Yeah, I didn't like that movie.
Yeah, I know.
It looked like a Disney live action.
No, you're crazy. Disney wishes they had the budget. Like, go back and watch Aladdin live action. That is like a single soundstage.
Well, we'll have
Moana
live action here before long. So,
And that was it. Those were the Oscars. They did it.
Those were the Oscars. Yeah,
they did it.
And now we get to start thinking about next year's Oscars.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Primate. Primate gets best Wuthering production Heights. Design. Yeah.
The Bride. We have a lot of contenders here.
I mean, have you seen The Bride? Did you finally see it?
No, I haven't seen it yet. I saw Hoppers, which I like, which is good.
Cute. I love it when a Pixar movie goes a little dark.
Hail Mary.
you know.
Yes. No, like, Hoppers was, I think, the best Pixar movie we've had in a while. Yeah. Like, let me pull up the Pixar lineup.
When that robot face fell off and you just had the scary robot, like, that was great. I feel like.
When they kill the butterfly.
So funny.
Oh, my gosh.
So unexpected and delightful. Yeah.
Yeah, because Pixar, I mean, like, listen to this lineup of recent Pixar movies. Okay. We had Elio last year.
Yeah.
We had Inside Out 2, which was fine. Then Elemental, never forget, the fire people, you know, discriminated against or whatever. We had Lightyear, which truly nobody watched.
Yeah.
Then Turning Red, which was good, but got dumped on during the pandemic. We had Luca, the sort of like Call Me By Your Name, water monster-ish one. And Soul, which I feel like has completely, like,
what is it about? I don't know. Yeah.
Like, I can't remember. Onward, which came out right before the pandemic.
Yeah.
Toy Story 4, which was terrible. The Incredibles 2, which was fine. I feel like Hoppers is the best one since Coco, which was in 2017.
100%. I mean, and that's the thing, is I feel like for so many animated movies, the villain, quote unquote, has been like feelings or being misunderstood or like, wow, we just need to hug each other. So it was nice to have, like, while they did, I think they struck a nice balance with Hoppers, where it's like, yeah, you think the villain is like this politician, and then you realize like maybe there is some mutual understanding you can find with each other to like help each other. But there also was like a sadistic, you know, genocidal maniac villain, and I liked that.
Right. Yes.
Yeah.
I also love the gag of the movie was Vanessa Bayer playing the giant shark coming out of the water.
I know, so
that
funny.
Was so funny.
So random.
So funny. Yes. Oh, it's Diane. She's actually a really nice person. Yeah. Hi.
Yeah. Yeah. Amazing. No, I'm glad you saw it. It was good. Next up, I think, is Project Hail Mary, which I'm very excited about.
Project Hail Mary. Yes. Going to see that this weekend. Also, Happy Death Day. Ready or Not 2 also comes out this week. So. Mm. Exciting stuff to talk about.
Yeah.
I'm sure it'll be good.
Yeah.
It's gotten great reviews. Has it? I don't think so. Okay. Well, thanks everyone for listening. It's been a delight covering another Oscars year with everyone.
Yeah.
Our eighth.
May next year see us on the red carpet harassing celebrities.
Wait, you know what, Shelby? The 10th. Or our 10th Oscars will be the Oscars 100th Oscars.
Oh my gosh.
That's corporate synergy right there.
Oh my gosh. So cute. We're just going to have to go and like crash the Oscar red carpet, I think. That's our goal. We just have to.
In disguise.
Yeah.
Well, I'll put my body in the body of a beaver. And it'll be perfect.
Yeah.
You can be in an egret or something.
Yeah.
And yeah.
It'll be great.
Well, okay, everyone. Thank you for listening. And we will be back next week with more pop culture. See you then. Bye.